Our next speaker is trying to enhance the flavor and nutritional quality of greenhouse-grown tomatoes. Please welcome Michael Jakovich.
Hi. So before I started my master's degree, I met up with a family friend. His name is Willis. He's an 88-year-old farmer. He's been farming all of his life. And I told him that I really wanted to find a way to enhance the flavor and quality of tomatoes. And he said, that's easy. You just need raw sunlight. And I thought, what does that mean? What is raw sunlight? So as I investigated a little bit more into that, we found out that there's some interesting spectral qualities in greenhouses compared to field-grown tomatoes. So we wanted to investigate those and find ways to improve the quality of tomatoes. So as I mentioned, we're trying to enhance the quality of tomatoes because they kind of have a reputation of poor flavor. You think of grocery store tomatoes in the winter, and they're usually kind of mealy and really not very appealing. And also, as I mentioned, greenhouses have a slightly different spectral environment compared to the outdoor. So I've got this figure on the bottom here, and if you look at the red lines, that's where the solar radiation cuts off at about 300 nanometers, whereas in a greenhouse, it cuts off at about 335 nanometers. So there's a whole category of light, UVB, which is 280 to 320 nanometers that's cut out. And not only is it a category of light, but plants have a photoreceptor just for UVB. So if plants are missing out on that component of light, there's aspects of plant metabolism that just aren't really happening. And as I mentioned, that protein that senses UV light is called UVR8, and it's responsible for a variety of secondary metabolic processes. And also, we did have a small UVC component. So UVC is not present in nature. That's usually filtered out by the stratosphere, but we used special lights that had a little bit of UVC in it to really bring out some of these effects. So what we did is we had a randomized block design in our greenhouse, and we used a commercial variety called Comete. It's just a variety that you might recognize if you see it in the grocery store. We had three treatments. We had a UVB lamp that emitted a broadband UV, which is UVA, UVB, and UVC. We also had those same lamps, but we covered them with a Mylar filter. And what the Mylar filter did was it got rid of the UVB and the UVC component. So it kind of allowed us to tease apart some of the different types of UV light. And we also put two-ply cheesecloth over both of these lamps to cut down on the irradiance, because these lamps are very intense. And we also had a true control, of course. Our daily ultraviolet integral, which is kind of a nod to the daily light integral used in the horticulture industry, basically just a measurement of how much UV we're giving these plants per day, was 5.39 kilojoules per meter squared per day using the Flint-Caldwell biological spectral weighting function. Outside, plants normally, at least in Indiana, plants would get on a summer's day about 17 kilojoules per meter squared per day. But because of that tiny amount of UVC in it, we had to really back off our dose, because otherwise we were killing the plants. We also rotated our plants about 90 degrees each day so that each face of the plant got an equal exposure. Some of our environmental parameters, we used the 25-15 temperature regime. Relative humidity, we couldn't control that in the greenhouse, but it was on average about 57.2%. The pH of our nutrient solution was 5.5 to 6. Our electrical conductivity, 1.8 to 2.2 millisiemens per centimeter. We adjusted our irrigation regularly to meet the needs of the plants. And we used 1,000-watt HPS lamps to supplement the PAR in the greenhouse during the low-light months of the year. So again, we have the two UV sources. So we have the broadband UV, which is the kind of the purple-colored curve that you see. And then the red curve is with the Mylar filter. So you can see there's kind of a clear cutoff point at about 315 nanometers where it just doesn't let any of that light through. It also attenuates the intensity pretty well. So like I mentioned, we had to back up our doses because I started noticing some really weird symptoms on the plants. First of all, we had some really interesting curling of the leaves and a waxy layer that was developing. And like I said, the original intent was to try to replicate the outdoor environment, but plants don't really do this normally, so I knew something was up. The other thing I noticed was that the developing fruits, the sepals, were curling up. Again, this is completely abnormal for tomatoes. And lastly, the thing that really made me scratch my head was the development of this netting on the fruits where the surface was exposed to the lamps. This isn't even really an example of a bad one. Some of them just look like cantaloupes growing on tomato plants. It was really bizarre. Here's a photograph of the UV lamps that I constructed. So I basically just mounted them on poles and had the plants around them. Them in the early stages. And I'd also like to point out we have our controls kind of nestled in the middle, so they're not receiving any of the radiation at all. And then here's kind of a nice panoramic of the greenhouse. And of course, one issue with the experiment is that we had this safety issue. Again, we're using ultraviolet radiation, so UVA, which is what you see in black lights, that's not so bad. UVA is what gives you sunburn, and UVC can actually cause pyrimidine dimers in your DNA, so it's kind of dangerous stuff. So of course we had our safety sign, and we made sure that people wore covered all their skin and had protective eyewear during any visits that they had. So to analyze our fruits, we looked at several parameters. We looked at fruit mass, colorimetry, total soluble solids and sugar content, titratable acidity, pH and electroconductivity, as well as ascorbic acid content. And we also looked at polyphenolics as well, but I'll get into that later. So for fruit mass, we noticed that there was a small decrease in the fruit mass. It was actually about 20% in the broadband UV treatment compared to controls. And that kind of reflects some of the plant performance. So as I showed in the earlier pictures, some of the leaves, they just really looked nasty and the plants just weren't doing very well. So that's kind of reflected in their relatively poor performance. The colorimetry is basically a way to quantify color of fruits. And I also use it as a way to make sure that I was harvesting fruits of the same ripeness. Because obviously if you harvest fruits that are a little more ripe than others, you're going to have different chemical profiles. And basically the takeaway message from this is that all of our fruits were about the same ripeness stage. Sugars didn't really change at all between treatments, and I'm not so surprised by that. I've never really been able to manipulate sugars outside of using water stress on plants, so that makes sense. pH was about exactly the same throughout treatments. Again, that's something that just seems to be almost kind of programmed into the plants. No matter what happens, they have the same pH. Titratable acidity, some slight differences, but from experiments that I've run in the past where I've had sensory panels, I highly doubt that this would be significant in a way that tasters could notice. And here's where things start getting interesting. So ascorbic acid is just a fancy way to say vitamin C. And we noticed a pretty steep increase, about 33%, in the broadband UV-treated plants compared to the controls. And this makes sense because UVC is an antioxidant compound that plants use to defend themselves against photooxidative stress. So as promised, I also have a section about some polyphenolics. So these are kind of produced by plants as a sunscreen, a way to defend themselves against incoming radiation. They're derived from the shikimate pathway, which eventually feeds into the phenylpropanoid pathway, and that'll come into play later on. Many of these flavonoids have been linked to ameliorating diseases like heart disease, hypertension, and even lowering the risk of developing some cancers. And the main polyphenolics in tomatoes are quercetin, naringenin, camphorol, and myristatin. So in order to do this, we had, you know, obviously these compounds are not in really high concentration, so I had to use HPLC with a single quad in tandem. And so once I did some method development, I found that the best way to do it was to look at selected ion readings. So that was a way to allow me to increase my sensitivity. And again, these are in very low concentration, so you get a little bit of noise when you look at the chromatograms. But I used external standards to make sure that my retention times were correct, so I knew that I was identifying the compounds that I was looking for. So between treatments, in terms of naringenin, we didn't really see a huge increase in naringenin. It was about 12%. But that certainly does indicate that there might be early. But one of the most profound findings was that with quercetin, we found that there was about a 50% increase between the broadband treatment and the control treatment. And again, quercetin is a compound that's been linked with some lowering the risk of certain cancers. So just to wrap things up, we found that the broadband UV supplementation decreased fruit mass by about 20%. The ascorbic acid content was about 31% higher in the broadband treated fruits compared to the controls. Quercetin was about 50% higher in those broadband plants as well. And we did find that the broadband UV altered the appearance and the marketability of some of these tomato fruits in terms of that netting that we saw along the fruit skin. So some of the next steps, this experiment isn't done. We still have yet to quantify carotenoids, so things like lycopene, beta-carotene, and lutein, which also have links to anti-cancer, anti-cancer properties as well as antioxidant properties. The other thing is looking at some of the volatile profiles. We measured sugar and acid, and it's kind of naive to assume that just sugars and acids are what make up the flavor of a fruit. A lot of these volatile chemicals are what kind of give it the aroma and what can influence your perception of a fruit. Many of them have even been linked to making things taste sweeter. So, for instance, 2,3-methylbutanol can make you think that a tomato is sweeter even though the sugar might be the same. Also looking at different UV sources, so I mentioned that the bulbs we used had a small amount of UVC that came out. We did find another type of bulb that doesn't have that, so we're going to see if maybe doing something that's a little more representative of the outside environment might be better. And also looking at trying to supplement on specific clusters instead of the whole plant. We would like to include a sensory panel because, again, you know, looking at some of this data, it doesn't really have that impact without knowing if consumers can really detect a difference between the treatments. Also changing out our variety to a more typical tomato variety that might have a little more continuity with the literature, and then also comparing to a field trial, because if we have tomatoes grown outdoors, we can establish chemical baselines to see, you know, how much quercetin is in a garden-grown tomato. So I went to the organic farm on Purdue's campus, and I got a little garden plot, and I grew my garden tomatoes. And so we'll analyze those and use those to compare to other experiments. I'd like to thank a number of people at Purdue, including members of the Mitchell Lab, the Phytochemistry and Bioavailability Lab run by Dr. Mario Ferruzzi, the greenhouse team who put up with this really wacky experiment, and a long-distance collaborator at the University of Helsinki. With that, I'll take any questions. Yeah?
With the UV application we have used, there is the reduction in the fruit size or yield, basically. There is also the increase of improvement in the phytochemical content. How do you see that type of application from a commercial point of view?
Right. So the question is relating to the decreases in yield that we saw in relation to the increases in nutritional quality and how we can bring that to be something that's commercially viable, how we can bring the application into that. So in reality, I don't think that the way we have this set up is really applicable for a commercial setting. Obviously, we have these lamps that are set up for every plant, and it's kind of dangerous if you're not wearing protective clothing and eyewear. So what I kind of see down the line is people looking at the transcriptome of these plants and saying, okay, these genes are upregulated because of the UV stress. Why don't we just constitutively promote, express them so that the plants kind of think that they're under UV stress? So I think that's one way to look at it. And the other way is, again, we did have that UVC component, which I think is what really messed up the plants. And that's really where the reduction in yield came from, because we had smaller leaves, we had leaves that were browning, because we were literally destroying the membranes and the chloroplast, so we were forming peroxides, and that was burning the plants from the inside. So I think that's really where the yield loss came from.
What about greenhouse covering structure?
It's a good question, Dr. Mitchell. So the question was about greenhouse covering structures. So I mentioned that greenhouses cut out UV light. There are options available where you can let UV light through, so it probably would behoove greenhouse managers to maybe look into alternate structures, or alternate coverings, I should say, that will let UV light through in a way that's probably not as harmful as using supplementation. Yes?
Do you think that if you expose these fruit post-harvest to UVB or whatever, that they would have similar nutritional content changes?
Yeah, so the question was, if we expose these fruits to UV post-harvest, will we see the same results? So that's actually been done quite a lot in the literature, and part of the impetus for this experiment is to see, you know, could we match or beat that by doing it kind of from day one? and getting these plants really stressed out throughout their whole life. But yeah, in the literature, they have done this post-harvest, and they have seen some pretty promising results from UVA, B, and C.
It's a similar question. Every evolving plant, right before the harvest, temporary UV treatment.
I think there was one paper that I found in an ISHS journal. It wasn't very good, but yeah, I think they did like a 3-day pre-harvest treatment.
Thank Michael Djokovic. And I personally would like to thank all of the speakers this session. We scored 7 out of 7 on staying on time to the minute. So thank you very much, and it was a great pleasure meeting all of you. And that wraps up the session. Thank you.